T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Morning. Hey, very, very, very difficult hour for me. A very difficult moment for me. Not as difficult and painful as the men in this room, but I'm sitting across from a classmate. And a classmate from, I don't know, 50 years ago. 50 years ago. Right, Ken? Kirk?
Yep.
Apologize, right?
Yes, sir.
We haven't seen each other for, I mean, you were 10?
10 years old when it first happened.
I was 10 years old. So yep. This is the first time we've seen each other in 50 years.
Close to it.
And we were both altar boys.
Yeah.
At Sacred Heart Church.
Yes.
In Shadyside.
Yes.
Who was the priest who was kind of running the show there?
Father Unger.
Monster Unger, you call him.
Us kids, yeah, the ones that were sodomized and raped by him. We used to call him Monster Unger, yeah.
And I'm telling you, it ripped out my heart last week. I see your name in the paper. And I see Alan's name, and Alan Perry's your attorney, and we're friends. I've known him for years. We've been talking about this for, heck, Alan, how long? A decade at least.
Oh, yeah, 15 years, 16 years.
And there's no way when you filed his case you had any idea that we were classmates or that we went to Sacred Heart together.
Not at all.
And these stories are all similar.
Absolutely. I have, right now, 24 cases against the Pittsburgh diocese, and there's just a pattern of abuse and grooming and concealment that goes through all of them.
All of them. And Jim Sada's here. And Jim, you were also molested by a Catholic priest.
That's correct.
And I want to kind of start out with the two gentlemen who were victims here, and I want to start out with Kirk, and I want a real simple explanation. Why is it, this is so difficult for you, but why is it important that people hear your voice and hear this story?
Well, I believe I've come to grips with this at least, 18 years ago when I first got sober. I carried this around with me for the better part of 25 years. I lashed out at society, juvenile delinquent. I was incorrigible. I was destructive. Towards others, vandalism, graffiti, stole cars, and it was a sort of a lashing out. I look back at my own behavior today, and I realize that this is all a part of that, drinking, doing drugs. But when I got sober, I changed directions, and I realized after about 6 months of being sober that this wasn't my fault. I always blamed myself. So having come to grips with this and having faced it and getting through it, I basically am very concerned about the non-survivors. A lot of us have been victims. We in the media, folks, talk about survivors, survivor networks and right. support groups. And I have 5 friends in my class that you also know.
Our classmates. Our buddies who are also altar boys at Sacred Heart.
They're now dead, Marty.
Dead. As a
result
of this.
Committed suicide, used drugs, OD'd on drugs, drank themselves to death. I am totally convinced, absolutely 100% convinced, it was the result of being molested and raped was.
Of the altar boys, of the altar group that we were all a part of, we all served Mass together. Mm-hmm. How many of my fellow altar boys, including yourself, how many were raped by this priest, Unger?
I know for a fact 5 others were, including myself. There could be 3 or 4 others that were on the fringe but didn't come out and admit it. But we as our little clique, our little group, we talked to each other about it. We told each other about it. We were the ones that coined the moniker, the name Monster Unger.
At that time, did you?
Yes. Wow. Yeah, that's what we called him, Monster Unger.
And you only talked to this inner circle because I never heard
right.
this.
Right, exactly. We were that inner circle of friends of ours. And I know you were I'm not going to say goody two shoes, but yeah. You were a straight shooter.
Well, a couple
as
of
a
guys
child.
That are dead were notorious bullies.
Right, exactly.
The toughest kids at Sacred Heart.
Exactly. And that's, I believe that's who he targeted.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
I want to shift over to Jim. Why are you here, buddy? Why is talking, is it helpful, first of all?
It helps tremendously. I mean, for, you know, 30 years, 35, 40 years, I basically lived a double life. You know, I mean, I had my family life and I had this other life. And, you know, I'm finally in the process of healing. You know, I'm trying to heal our family, you know, with the support of my wife and my children. They've been tremendous. And and that's one of the reasons why I felt the need to come forward. Also, I want to help, you know, if I can help one person feel like they have the strength that other people have come forward and told their story, you know, I think that's what's important. If one person can come forward who never thought they could, I think that's a powerful statement.
Where were you assaulted and by whom, sir?
His name's Jack Hale.
He's still alive.
He's still alive.
Unger's dead. Go ahead.
He lives in Somerset. He assaulted me at his lake house, and he assaulted me at Quigley High School. I didn't go to Quigley, but he was a family friend. That's how we stayed in contact. He was a master manipulator. He manipulated families.
How old were you?
Started when I was 12, and it ended when I was, you know, the ending is not as clear as the beginning.
Yeah.
It was probably when I was 17, 18 years old, when I could pretty much make the stand not to go visit this man anymore.
By the way, he's never been arrested, never been indicted.
Never.
Never. He needs to be in prison.
He does.
Right?
He does. Yes.
Until he dies.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And that has to be, and one of the things that I really truly love about Alan Pear, man, you've been a warrior on this thing for two decades?
Close to it.
Two?
Close to it.
And why have you stayed in the fight so long? It's, by the way, people think they're always chasing a buck. Can't be about the big bucks, man.
No, I this is just of all the things that I've done as a lawyer and helped people who've been injured, and this is the most significant thing I've ever worked on, and this is my passion to help these people. I've listened to hundreds of victims, probably over 100 at least, who've told me their stories. I've had grown men, football players. I've had executives. I've had people. Drug addicts. I've had tell me the same stories and cry in my office and tell me how their lives have been ruined. And I say, you know, if I can do something for these people, this would be like to me just the best thing I could ever do in my life.
Alan Pear and Alan, but the battle has not been easy. I mean, you come up against one wall after another for more than 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, in the early days, it's so interesting. The early 2000s when the spotlight came out in the
right.
Boston Globe. When I started filing these cases, Catholics would, you know, come up to me and just say, "How dare you? I'll never be your friend again," and this and that. Now, some of the same people are coming up to me after the grand jury report and seeing, really into opening the envelope and seeing what was there. Go get them. You're doing the right thing, and I always knew I was doing the right thing, but. It was not so popular when I first started it.
All right, folks, we're talking about their stories. We're talking about the Catholic Church, and we're going to talk about what is justice when we come back. We'll be right back. And I was thinking back when I saw Kirk Rice's name in the paper about being an altar boy and how much it meant to be an altar boy. You were a part of a special group at Sacred Heart, and it was such a highly regarded church. And I remember Unger, I just never liked him. He just wasn't friendly. He wasn't a nice guy. He never, ever spoke to me. He was kind of arrogant. Wasn't he kind of arrogant?
Mean arrogant.
Yeah, mean.
Yeah, mean.
And so, you know, there's always this whole grooming process. How did he groom you and the other guys that were also altar boys that were my friends and yours? How did he groom them?
With that demeanor, actually, that meanness. He would bark at you, never asked you to do anything, always told you to do something. He was the priest, for God's sake.
Yeah.
How are you going to, you can't go against him. I mean, if he told you to do something, you had to do it.
You know what floored me, too, and it had me in my mind's eye walking through tell our listeners that there was this tunnel, right, that went from the grade school over to the church.
Yeah.
And tell us about this tunnel.
Well, it was a tunnel in all sense of the word.
Yeah.
And it was very foreboding. It was intimidating.
Yeah, it was.
To go through that tunnel. It was very dark. It was narrow. And at the other end, there was this boiler. It was like 20 feet tall, shooting flames at both ends, always in a rumble, especially in the wintertime. And as a 10-year-old or 11-year-old, it was very scary to be even near that thing. And then to come through that tunnel, and then, well, what happened to me as a result of that, that stayed in my mind still today.
When he would rape you, what would he say? What would he tell you to do? To be quiet, or he was going to kill you, or what would
exactly.
he say?
He would always say, be quiet. Be quiet. Don't say nothing. Be quiet. I yelled out one time, this hurts. Stop it. And, you know, and he said, be quiet. Be quiet.
And why didn't you tell anybody?
Well, number one, fear. He said that if this is our secret, if you were to tell anybody about this, Jesus would harm you or your family and your family, not or. He went on to say that bad things will happen to you.
I'm always intrigued by this, and Alan has seen this his whole career. Why does he pick you and not me? I never got a hint of it. I just never liked him.
I have no idea. They have their own ways of thinking, their minds, these pedophile people.
Were all the guys you think a little troubled, though?
Well, if you look at back at us.
Yeah, the guys who were dead.
They're dead, and I should be right along with them because I drank prolifically and I became addicted to prescription pain pills. And for whatever reason, I guess I got to attribute it to the most honorable Judge Donald Mackin, who sent me to jail and rehab.
How about the guys who started texting me, and old folks that I know started texting me saying, Kirk Rice, he's a BSer. So nobody even wants to believe you now. Does that hurt you?
Well, no, it doesn't.
Because I believe you, by the way.
Everybody has their own opinions, and they could think whatever they want to think. I'm coming forward for this because of our dead friends, Marty.
Right.
Not for any other ulterior motives or money.
Well, this is actually a great point that I wanted to bring up to Jim Seda. And Jim, this isn't about money. I think this is the other thing that makes me angry. These tried and true Catholics annoy the hell out of me when they start this crap. A woman actually called her last week and said, why do they care about something that happened 30 to 40 years ago? Alan's addressed this before. To you, this is real today.
It's real today. My family still lives with it. My parents live with it. You know, my kids, my son was at, we went to one of the listening sessions last week. And my son actually got up and spoke. And it was phenomenal. I was so proud of him. Central Catholic grad. He spoke clearly, concisely, respectful to the church, respectful. He even gave Bishop Zubik respect. You know, I mean, that's how he was raised. You know, we were fortunate that we had a strong family values to raise our children Catholic. But it's not about the money. It's about helping other people. It's about the ones who haven't come forward yet to give them the strength to know that there are people out there that are going to believe them.
After you were assaulted by this priest for years, he literally physically handed out communion, Holy Communion, at your wedding.
He handed out communion at my wedding. I didn't tell my wife for 10 years after we were married. If he had still been an acting priest, he probably would have served the Mass at our wedding.
Even though he sexually assaulted
you? Even though he sexually assaulted me. He had total control. There was no... You know, I had no idea what to say, who to tell anybody. I mean, I couldn't even tell my wife when we were going through our marriage classes. You know, she asked the question. She asked me 3 or 4 or 5, probably 10 times before we were married. Did Jack ever do anything to you?
Wow.
And that was his MO. He was a master manipulator of families. I know numerous families from Quigley, families from St. Francis Xavier on the north side, that we were all friends with him. And we all, you know, ended up in the same way.
It's incredible to me. And Alan, to take it to the nth degree, this priest had the audacity to send him a card with a check, right?
Well, when Jim's brother passed away,
right.
His family received a sympathy card from Father Hale, signed by him with a $200 check.
Oh, my God.
Apologizing for breaking the family's trust. It is Jim and his family's belief that his brother also had been abused because he overdosed and died. But, you know, we never were able to get that information before he died. But it is, you know, interesting that his family gets a sympathy card for his brother dying and a specific handwritten note, "I apologize for breaking your trust."
It's unbelievable. It just rocks your world. We're going to talk more when we come back. Hang in there, folks. This is crazy. Artie Griffin here. I've not been back to the Catholic Church since the grand jury report was released. Now, over the years, including interviews in Alan's office, Alan Parrish here, including face-to-face TV interviews, I've interviewed 50 men raped by Catholic priests. Enough. I can't go back. We're looking for another place. And then, honestly, what blew me away was I see Kurt Rice's name in a paper last week, and he was a classmate of mine. We were altar boys together. And to learn that he was raped by a priest that I did not respect or admire, quite frankly, but it shook me to my core. And what I'm wondering is, Kurt, as that was going on, and we were all friends, we were altar boys, we were all in that playground right in front of the school every day wrestling. And the guys that you're telling me, including yourself, that were raped, and the guys who were dead, were what I would call, and tell me if I'm wrong here, the toughest guys in the school.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, we were. We had our own little clique.
Right? A couple of them I would say were the most popular, right?
Yep, yes.
And I would describe a couple as even bullies. Would
yes.
that be fair?
Yes.
How do they end up being the guys that are picked by Father Unger to be raped in the very school where we grew up and in the very church where we were praying as altar boys and carrying out Mass?
I can speculate. I have no training in the arts.
No, I'm just
in sciences of psychiatry and psychology. But it to me, it was all a matter of mind control. I tell you, we were in a sense different, birds of a feather, if you
yeah,
will.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, maybe discipline in other ways didn't work.
Did the guys who were being raped by Unger talk about it?
Yes, we did talk
you?
About it. Yes, we did.
How many?
Five of us.
Five of you?
Yeah.
And they're all dead?
And they're all dead.
Oh, my gosh.
They're
and for all
dead.
Intents and purposes, you believe you should be dead?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. A normal human being could not have consumed the amount of alcohol or did the amount of drugs that I had done and still be alive. I don't know why I'm here.
And you did it, you were punishing yourself because of the pain?
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
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 That's why I did it.
How are you?
Well, I'm still dealing with it. It's something that I would believe would never go away.
Yeah.
But you get it out. I was told very early on in this new life of sobriety that you're only as sick as your secrets.
Nice.
So if you get that stuff out of you, that garbage that you're holding in, you can break free of it, and it no longer controls your life, and you can heal and move on. And that's sort of like the phase of my development now that I'm in.
The darkness of this, Jim Sade is also here. He was raped, he was sexually assaulted by a different priest, this Jack Hale guy. He's still out there.
He is.
In fact, he became a counselor.
He did. He became a counselor in West Virginia.
Of kids.
A child counselor, yes.
I tell you what, there's an irony to your story. And by the way, it's not unique in that despite this horror, and that's the right word, right?
Yes.
And the way it ripped your life to shreds, you've remained a loyal Catholic and sent all your kids to Catholic schools.
That's correct.
How in the blankety blank do you justify that in your mind?
I can't. I justify it because, you know, I feel that the Catholic education, the Catholic Church, you know, the Catholic Church isn't these priests. The Catholic Church is us, the people. Jesus, the Lord, you know what I mean? And I feel like my kids have been, you know, they're tremendous kids, respectful adults, young adults.
But you don't have resentment toward the church.
I'm beyond that.
Yeah.
I have the resentment is for the, and it's not even for the guy who sexually assaulted me. It's for the administration. That's the problem. It's not the church. You know, I protected my children. I did every mission trip. I did every, you know, field trip. They were never alone in the church. So I knew that they were going to be okay.
How are you?
Every day I get better.
Do you?
Every day hurts. I mean, there's something that comes up every day that you don't realize what, you know, what the effect that it had on you.
Alan pairs with me. Alan and I have been, Alan, how many years? We've talked about this for 15 years, as long as I've had this talk show.
Yes.
So we have an opportunity here legislatively. You know, Alan, I know this, and you're a smart enough guy to know this. There are, I know right now, $1,500 an hour lawyers who are lobbying the state, right?
Yes.
And they have massive lobbyists. They have major league marketing firms to write their press release. They're spending millions of dollars because they don't want the truth out and they don't want to pay out. Is that not true?
That's true.
Right? The Catholic
That's
Church true. To this day.
That's true.
Tell me what you want to see happen in Harrisburg, because I want to see the same thing.
Well, there's there on two fronts, we're trying to get justice for these victims from the 70s and 80s and 90s. And the one front is the legislature. So, again, we got close to having the two-year window approved, and then the Senate adjourned.
Tell listeners what that would mean. Lift the statute of limitations for 2 years.
If you lift the statute for these older cases, people could come forward and say, I was abused in 1976 or 1981, and have 2 years to file that case where they could get their day in court and they could get justice. That's the legislative end. We're also fighting in the court, the judicial end, to try to say there is reason under the law to extend the statute of limitations, where primarily the diocese hid the evidence that these children would have needed to come forward and bring cases when the statute of limitations was still alive. How is it fair that the evidence that they would need, namely of the priests being abusers and known pedophiles and being placed in a situation with children, knowing that, how is it fair they say, well, you're 20 years old and you didn't file suit by the time you were 20, and therefore you're barred. And that unfortunately has been the law, which we are in the process of trying to change, especially based on the grand jury report, because that's something nobody could have discovered. The grand jury said nobody could have discovered the extent of this widespread scheme to cover up, protect priests, until the grand jury used their subpoena power to get into the secret
archives. You knew
archives.
It. You've known this for years.
Yeah, but you knew it. You believed it.
Right. You just didn't have a hammer.
You didn't know it. Yeah, I mean, they denied it. And, I mean, even under oath, priests in Altoona, Johnstown, the case that I was just arguing in the Superior Court, the father in that case came forward earlier and said, I knew nothing about this particular priest. This was the Hutchinson case, which was the first case in Pennsylvania to be involved in this. He said, I knew nothing about this priest. When they got into the secret archive, they found out three other people had been abused by him.
Oh,
I mean,
my goodness.
So it's just it was a massive cover-up.
It makes me sick. And at the end of the day, it could destroy the church. And you know what I tell guys, I say to people, guys, and everybody's different, I can pray in my front seat of my car. I can find God in a Walmart. I'm not going back to the church. Everybody makes different decisions. But, you know, we say it's not the church, it's the priest. But when it becomes 1,000 priests and thousands of victims, it is the church, to me. But everybody thinks differently. We'll be right back. We've got to talk about our bishop. I need honest opinions from everybody in this room. Thanks, guys. Hey, Marty Griffin here. I want to thank Kirk and Jim for their courage. And I want to thank Alan Pear, who's been really a warrior for at least 15 years on this. Alan, I want to carry out, and then I'll get back to the fellas here, but so the $1,500 an hour lawyers that I know that are representing the Catholic Church, and some here in Pittsburgh are as high as $1,800 an hour, and Alan knows who they are. They argue that, well, all this is going to do is bankrupt the church. That's all this is going to do. You're going to destroy the church. They'll be insolvent if we pay all these people.
Well, I've heard that. I've heard that for years. I have no idea. I mean, I've heard there's insurance. There's insurance they had at those years, and frankly, I don't know how much money they have. Although, in recent discussions, they've told me that this fund that they're setting up is actually going to be a significant fund to try to help these victims.
You know, when I say, Alan, they got to do what they got to do, man.
Right.
These people are hurt. I, you know, quit whining. You're getting $1,800 an hour. You're calling me to say my argument's going to destroy the Catholic Church because it'll be insolvent. You're getting $1,800 an hour. Forget about it. It's ridiculous. Hey, I wanted to talk about the bishop, and I have to because I've known him, well, since I was 10 years old. And he's been on this show. Heck, we've been at dinner many times. I would call him a friend. I mean, he's a friend. And first I want to get to Kirk. He was, Zubik, was a priest at Sacred Heart Church at the same time that you were there and your other friends were being raped by Father Unger at the same time.
Exactly.
How do you react to that? How does that register with you regarding Zubik? How do you feel about, could he have known? Should he have known?
He had to have known. It's just utterly ludicrous. It's ridiculous to even think that he had didn't know what was going on. Come on. I mean, it's a school. It's a church. You don't know what's going on in your own church. You don't know what your fellow workers, co-workers are doing. No, he must have known. He had to have known.
And so in a strange connection here, Jim Seda, you were sexually assaulted by this priest who was associated with Quigley.
Correct.
And there were a number of Quigley boys who were raped.
There's quite a few that I know.
And at the same time, Zubik was a priest at Quigley.
He was. He was the assistant headmaster at Quigley at that time from, I believe, 81 through 86. And Jack Hale, the headmaster,
who
assaulted me, he had a house on the campus. And so there would be any number of guys who would stay at the house when they would get back late from a basketball game because they lived, you know, they could have lived 40 miles away, 20 miles away over in Manac or, you know, up in near close to Cranberry. So they would, rather than driving home at night, they would just stay there.
So I
have to believe he knew. Zubik had to have known. There was too many oddities going on at the house for him not to question, like, why are these boys staying at the house?
Alan, Pear, I mean, obviously, you're looking at both of these cases. You have a significant number of cases. Would it be hard for you as an attorney not to connect the dots and believe that the bishop didn't know that this was going on in the 35, 40 years where he was part of a church where this was going on?
It'd be extremely hard. I mean, when we were all growing up, Marty, even, you know, there were teachers at your school or everybody knew who the weird ones were. Everybody knew. You didn't know why because you were young. And you just said, don't be alone with teachers so-and-so because they're weird. You know,
So,
you know, I mean, even the kids knew there was something going on with certain teachers and such. It's hard to believe that an administrator who's living there, you know, there all the time would be ignorant of anything going on. It's hard to believe.
It's hard for me to fathom. And it's interesting, too. So Kirk Rice, who was my classmate back there in the late 60s, actually, early 70s, are you still a Catholic?
No.
No.
Oh, no, no, no.
No, do you go to church at all?
I'm a staunch believer in God, and I do respect karma. that is, if you do good things will happen to you. If you do bad things, well, que sera, sera. But no, I do not practice that teachings of that cult in any way, shape, or form.
And this is where you disagree with Jim, because you're still a practicing Catholic.
We are.
You still go to church every Sunday.
We don't go every Sunday, but we go as often as we can, and we do support the Catholic schools. We support, you know, our children in those schools.
It's interesting, and it's a terrible dynamic for a guy like me and for a guy like you. So I had this priest I really liked, and you know, you bring I have a son, and I'm sitting there with my man and my two girls, and I'm thinking, I spent my life trying to do the right thing to fight for people, right?
Right.
So how could I sit in this church without them creating major change? Because they really haven't, Jim.
Right.
They haven't fired anybody. No one's gone to jail.
Exactly. That's the thing. Change has to be made, and it has to start at the top.
That's the problem.
They need, because there are good priests out there. There, you know, the chaplain at Oakland Catholic and Central Catholic, the kids love him. He treats them with respect. He treats them like they're adults. He teaches them things. I mean, it's amazing. You know, he made a comment to me that said, you know, I have to change the way I do things. And I said, no, you don't need to change what you do, because that's why the kids like you. That's why they listen to your gospel and listen to you, you know, your homily and teach them, that they want that knowledge from you because you're a good man.
Are you going to be okay?
I'm going to be okay. I have support from my wife. You know, my kids, I think they have a better understanding of where we came from and where we're going. My son stood up at that listening session. I think that's going to help him in his quest to become, you know, heal himself. But it's a process. It's an everyday process. I was fortunate that, you know, I didn't get involved with the drugs and the alcohol. So that was one less, you know, hurdle I had to climb.
Are you going to be okay, Kurt?
Marty, I'm an active and contributing member of a 12-step fellowship group here in Pittsburgh.
Right.
And one of our tenets is that to keep what I have, sobriety, is to give it away. And I do my best on a daily basis not to harm people and to help people.
Good for you.
And
man,
I'm going to be okay.
You're gonna be
because
okay.
I got a lot of support from, right, from my fellowship members.
Alan, I can't thank you enough, man. True warrior.
Yeah.
True warrior.
Thank you, Marty, for giving a voice to this kind of...
Very few lawyers, man. He's been doing this for a lot longer than any grand jury. It's amazing what you've done and carried this on. All right, folks, thank you. We'll be right back.
Woo!
Thank you. We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.